Three things that you need to know about on this day. Here they are. Ukrainian immigrants are in Poland, and now they're being told by some to get out. Why? Well, something absolutely crazy that they recently did at a concert. Meanwhile, speaking of Ukraine, it's quite literally sending Nazis to try and stop the Russian army. Nazis to stop the Russian army. Wow, is history repeating itself? Wow. See that? That's a new movie that's out. It's meant to convince you that big bad China is about to invade Taiwan. The way they make it look, it seems inevitable, right? We're going to give it the Sanchez effect for you. Let's do this. Hello. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. And I want to start with something weird that happened recently in Poland and is still having repercussions across the entire country. See, Poles are on edge, and they're kind of angry. And here's why they're angry. The country of Poland has taken in hundreds, you may know this, they've taken in hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian immigrants as a goodwill gesture, right? Many of them are young men who simply just didn't want to fight in the war with Russia. And Poland has housed them, they've taken care of them, they've defended them. Defended them, by the way, from accusations that they're cowards or that they're extremists or that they're Nazis. Yes, Nazis. Stay with me here because this is about to get weird. Okay, look at this video. See that? Yeah, those are Ukrainian men, and they're starting what turned into a near riot at the Polish National Stadium there. I don't know if you could hear it, but this was crazy and loud during a rock concert. They jumped over the barricades en masse and began heading toward the pitch where they took on the police and they waved flags that seemed to prove their critic. Look at this. Look at this. This is nuts. And the police tried to arrest them, and then they couldn't, and then they fought with them. And that flag I showed you just a little while ago, that's a Nazi emblem. And the flag is the symbol as well. That same emblem is the symbol of the Ukrainian Insurgent Army. It's called the O-U-N-O-P-A. And the OPA stands for, without any equivocation, what is a pro-Nazi organization. In fact, this is not like something new, okay? This was formed during World War II. The OPA was formed during World War II to help the Germans kill Russians and Poles. Help the Germans. Did you get that? Help the German Nazis. And they're still together as an organization, same name. In fact, it's known for two infamous massacres of Poles in Volnia and in Galicia. Look it up. It's all over the Googles. These are horrors that to this day are a really big deal for the Polish people. Imagine suddenly these people, the Poles, see this happening. And that's why their government and their prime minister are now, they're embarrassed about this, and they're kind of angry, as they should be.
I'm pleased to report that the situation, which sparked significant public outrage, has now come to a resolution. I'm referring to the riots, acts of aggression, and various provocations at the National Stadium during the concert of the Belarusian rapper, where unnecessary incidents occurred that demanded an immediate response. I've just received information indicating that proceedings have been initiated against 63 individuals regarding their departure from the country. They will be required to leave voluntarily or face compelled removal if they fail to do so willingly. This group includes 57 Ukrainians and 6 Belarusians.
Makes it sound like it's no big deal, right? We took care of it. It's over. Don't think about it. Don't talk about it. That's it. That's it. It is a big deal for the people of Poland, right? That's their prime minister, by the way. His name is Tusk, who's been made to look kind of foolish. And now he, like you heard, he said, we're just going to get rid of 63 people. And that's it. Nothing to worry about. Don't talk about it anymore. This guy is very pro-West, very pro-West. Has a history of essentially dancing to whatever tune the European Union sings. And by the way, you're not going to believe this. It's like so predictable. So, he just put out a tweet, and guess who he's blaming for this? Yeah, if you guessed Russia, you would be right. That's right. He's the tweet where he blames Russia, he gives no evidence, no information, no explanation. Just essentially, there it is. Russia's doing everything. They're stirring up anti-Ukraine. Putin did it. You can't make this stuff up. But you know what? The Poles, who have been against the onslaught of Ukraine immigrants into their country, they will likely want to have their prime minister do more than just put out this silly tweet. And that's already happening. In fact, there is this guy. This guy's an MP in Poland, right? His name is Paweł Jabłonski. See him right there? That's what he's doing. He's saying, no, Mr. Prime Minister. That's not enough. You can't just slap some people on the hand and say, go away. No, he's suggesting Ukrainians, lots of them, should be sent packing. He wants Ukrainian immigrants to leave Poland and go back home and fight in their war. So, look, let me stop at this point and add something that's important. Poland is not the only place where suddenly, I can't even believe I'm saying this, you know, pro-Nazi organizations are making headlines. Look at this headline now. This is the Kiev Independent. And look what it says. The elite Azov Corps, another very out-in-the-open pro-Nazi organization, is being called to the front lines. Why? Because as the headline suggests, the Russians are advancing on Donetsk. Actually, can I just tell you something? The Russians aren't just advancing. They are dominating at this point. Pokrovsk is days from being overtaken by Russia, and so are many of the towns and the cities in that vicinity, as are the roads and the supply lines in that entire region. It's not me saying this. It's about every military expert is saying this who's looking at this. In fact, I'm going to let you hear now, not from a Russian podcaster, so you don't say, oh, yeah, RT, of course. They're... No, no. I want you to hear from a Ukrainian podcaster. This guy is a loyal Ukrainian. He's pulling for Ukraine. That's his country. That's his side. But he also is honest, and he explains on his pro-Ukraine podcast the situation. This is a tongue twister. In Pokrovsk.
And honestly, guys, I'm quite surprised with this Russian attack. I thought that they are not capable for those fast attack missions already. But they show definitely that they have advantage over Ukraine. And it's not the Russian army that became so outstanding rapidly. No. Again, it's most likely the failure of the Ukrainian defense coming from the Ukrainian high military command. So here, I don't have more details to say, but judging on the Russian fast movement, clearly something went completely wrong with Ukrainian defense. And here's the notice from our officer on the ground, Officer Plus. He has his Telegram channel, who confirms those not good news. The situation in Donetsk region is truly critical. Besides the infantry holding the already marked lines on the map, there are also enemy sabotage and reconnaissance groups trying to slip through further. Cause problems. So Russians already penetrated and they sent their sabotage groups further. I cannot say much for now, unfortunately, but situation definitely occurred. I hope that the higher military command will pay attention to this and change their priorities.
Do you hear what he said? The Russians have already penetrated. They have broken through. The situation is, what did I say? Critical. Critical. And then he says, I hope they change their priorities in Kiev. Well, I guess they have. Because if their priority is to send out the Azov battalion as reported, the effect, at least according to many military analysts that I read, follow, and talk to, like U.S. Army retired Colonel Douglas McGregor, you know what he's saying? He's saying that if Kiev sends the Azov brigade, that's actually going to help Russia. Why? He says it's going to cause a spike in military recruitment all over Russia and cause the Russians there on the front to fight even harder because they hate the Azov Brigade. They're going to say, send me, send me. I want to fight those you-know-whats, right? I mean, that's normal, right? You see, most Russians hold no ill will against the Ukrainian people. They don't. They really don't even hold any real negative regard over the Ukraine army because they figure, well, they're just doing their jobs. But I'll tell you what, when it comes to the Russians hating the Azov Brigade, the Russians do hate the Azov Brigade, and that's what makes a difference in this case. Let's turn to China.
Oliver,
Looks like a pretty good movie, right? That's the official trailer for this movie. It's new. It's called The Zero Dark Attack. This time it's not about Russia, by the way. That'll be the next one, I guess. It's about China. It's about China invading Taiwan. I know it's just a movie, but I've checked. It's also a trend. It's a storyline. It's a false narrative that seems to be popping up all over the place of late. Look around. You'll see it. It's on the Googles. It's on newspapers. The media is reporting this. It seems that the Western media is trying to, I guess, tell us something. I mean, look at this headline. I found a couple of cases, and I could have found a lot more. This is The Telegraph, a British newspaper with a propensity for spinning an anti-China, pro-Western agenda. The aim of this headline you're about to see here, well, there it is, well, it's got two obvious purposes, I think, to get readers to fear China and hate China. Pretty simple. Nothing changes. It reads, the signs that China is ready to invade Taiwan. And then look right under the headline. See the subheadline, what it says? It says, it would be a massive gamble if China tries to take on the military machinery of the United States. If that sounds like a commercial for the U.S. military, well, it is. You see, the underlying message here is, don't worry, readers. The good guys will take care of the bad guys if they choose to invade. That's not journalism. But it doesn't stop there. Here's another media outlet representing the UK, a country that has, by the way, spent centuries trying to control, destroy, and did I mention addicting all of the Chinese people on heroin so that they can make money off of their addiction? Yes, that country is now explaining to all of us just how awful and dangerous the Chinese are and how it'll be really hard for them if these really bad Chinese people go and, quote, invade their island neighbor.
We look into the future to see what might happen if the Chinese attack their island neighbor.
Even in the very first line, he kind of gives himself away, right? You know exactly what his intention is. First of all, Taiwan is not just an island neighbor. No more than Florida is just a peninsular neighbor in the United States. In fact, according to the Chinese, and this is their version, Taiwan is still one of their provinces. And whether you agree with them or not, that should be included in your narrative, right? Otherwise, it looks like, well, you're just doing something as a pro-Western hack, which ain't too far from what he's doing. The fact is, the Western neocons, along with MI6, CIA and Mossad, they would like nothing more than to wrestle Taiwan away from China, just as they want to also control the islands of the South China Sea. Look, that's not to say that everything that China does is right and that it hasn't been involved in some chicanery of some building up of some of these fake islands in the South China Sea. I get that. But it's important to understand that what you read, what you hear, what you see, you should consider it, not just for what it says, but for where it comes from. Here's the takeaway. If a British newspaper is criticizing China, or for that matter, criticizing Russia, which they do regularly, just like the sun rises in the east, you can bet your bottom dollar, you can be sure that whatever they are saying, it's not objective, it's likely not fair, and quite possibly, it's a false narrative about big, bad China wanting to take over the world. Here's the sad part, and maybe you can't blame them, but there are plenty of blokes out there who they only consume Western media. Look, they work hard. They get home, they turn on the news, and that's all they know. And they give him BS. Like this poor guy. Here's some poor guy trying to argue with my good luck, with my very good friend, George Galloway.
I've yet to see any evidence that they want to take over. There's no Chinese bases, none at all, in foreign countries. China doesn't have military bases in Britain or all around the United States. Chinese warships are not sailing off the coast of Britain or the United States. It's the other way around.
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong is in China.
No, I'm saying that they're taking over Hong Kong, aren't they?
How can you take over your own country?
You gotta love that. I mean, how do you take over your own country, by the way? Ron Alato is a U.S. Army veteran. He's also an ex-CIA contractor. I mean, talk about an insider. Talk about a guy who knows exactly about what we have been talking about on this day. Ron, good to see you, my friend.
Hello, hello. Very nice to see you today. Thank you for the invitation.
I can't help but ask, you watched my friend George Galloway tell that poor guy who probably doesn't know. I'm sure he's a very nice man, but he just doesn't know, like a lot of people in the West and a lot of people in the UK and in the United States. The media feeds them this narrative that all these countries are taking over the world, when in fact, I think most of them live in a country that is in fact trying to take over the world. What did you think of that exchange with Galloway? Is he right?
Well, obviously, George Galloway is a person who understands geopolitics and understands world history, understands that Hong Kong has been part of China, was temporarily under British control, but came back home, came back to his natural status as a Chinese territory. And obviously, the other person have no idea he was talking about. But I don't blame him. The thing is the narrative in the press, the narrative in the media, especially since 2022, when we have the military operation of Russia against Ukraine, we have a constant repetition from all the media, from all the propaganda media, from all the neocons, from the governments of the post-Christian West, as I call it, with 24/7 brainwashing the public and telling us that after Ukraine, Russia is going to come and go after Berlin and after London and after Paris and invade the whole continent. Well, obviously, that makes no sense. But people in the street, they don't know better. They just go with the propaganda, with the media tell them day and night.
And that's what's cool. You know, you're there. You're in my hometown. You're in Miami. You're a Miami guy. I'm a Miami guy. We're both Latinos, Hispanics. You know, my dad always told me when I was a little boy, I grew up with a father who was not like maybe other Cubans, you know. He actually grew up poor. He had to leave school in fourth grade. And he always said to me, he said, you know, son, the United States is a really wonderful country, and we appreciate the fact that we were able to go to the United States. And in many ways, there's much virtue there. But I will tell you, as a citizen of one of the countries in Latin America, that the things that the United States has done in Latin America are absolutely deplorable, and very few people and nobody in the media understands it. But the things that the United States has done in countries like Guatemala, where they started or fomented a civil war that killed 200,000 people, tried to assassinate the leaders in Cuba, what they've done in Panama, what they've done in Santo Domingo and Dominican Republic, and I could go on and on. I mean, these are stories that I don't say because I want to be critical of the United States. I say them because they're factual, and we should know that so that we can learn from them for the sake of the future, for the sake of our children. Do you not agree?
Well, my viewpoint is that something that should have ended 30 years ago did not end. The neocon worldview, the globalist worldview, and when I'm talking about the mainstream Republican Party and the mainstream Democratic Party, they are the same. They basically are the same.
Yeah.
They did not see the mission of the United States as only stop the Soviet Union during the Cold War that ended in the early 90s. In their mind, they see their mission to dominate globally. We are the only superpower in the 90s. The whole world should be with us or against us. And whoever is not with us, we are going to banish them. We're going to destroy them. We're going to repress them. We're going to sanction to death, economic war. And the war is ours. I mean, Libya, Iraq number one, Iraq number two in 2003. This imperial mindset, there only can be space for one superpower. There can be space in the world for one vision, the globalist, secularist, liberal vision of the United States. And that is where the neocons don't understand the reality of a multipolar war with a superpower, economic superpower in China, with a military superpower, nuclear superpower in Russia, with different centers of gravity around the world. Yeah. I mean, the Helmut Kohl, the famous chancellor of Germany, is one of his most closest advisors, a person who was with Helmut Kohl for many, many years, once said, I mean, a couple of years ago, it's very strange to deal with Americans. And he was talking after the Cold War. He was not talking during the Cold War, during the Soviet Union of America. After the Cold War, he said, dealing with Americans is extremely strange and hard, because if you do exactly what they tell you to do, they will hug you and hug you and hug you and break your bones with the hug. Yeah. But if you dare to say, I have a different opinion, I don't agree with that, then they look at you, how dare you? How dare you? No, not agreeing with us. And I'm not talking about a left-wing, a socialist. I'm talking about a conservative person from the conservative CDU party of Germany. He realized that in the 90s, instead of, okay, the Cold War end, that's it, it should be a new page in history, maybe. And there is a lot of history about that, a lot of evidence that Russia wanted to join NATO at the time in the 2000s. But everybody spit in the open hand of Russia back in the early 2000s. Putin gave it to them as a open hand in friendship, and they spit on the hand of Russia. No, we don't need you. We only need one superpower, that's us. Everybody has to do our way or the highway. And that is the problem with the neocons, with the globalists. They don't understand the different balances of powers in the world.
Yeah, no, you're right, because, you know, the picture you just drew is interesting. I mean, in my mind, as you were talking, I was seeing Nixon in China and thinking, wow, what a wonderful promise that could turn into. And it was a wonderful promise in many ways, economically, for the Chinese people, because they created the most unbelievably significant and fast-growing economy, perhaps in the history of the world. But then somehow the United States decided to turn on them. And again, it was all about dominion. Dominion of the world in many ways. Same thing, you know, the Cold War ends, the wall comes down in Berlin, and we're thinking, wow, Russia and the United States are from now on going to be friends. Everything, the chips were in place, the dominoes were in place for that to become just that. And then somebody had to come and just throw something on it and knock it all down and say, no. We don't want to be friends with these people. So you're right. It's all about this unbelievable promise that existed that suddenly just was completely ramshackled, destroyed by who? You worked at the CIA. What was this a narrative that you heard? Did you see it discussed? Was it that out in the open? In closed doors, in the CIA building, and other places like that.
Well, obviously, the CIA had a warrior mindset long before I was there, and it was the mindset of the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the Reagan mindset. Obviously, we're going to fight communism. We're going to fight a Cuban influence in Latin America. We're going to fight the Warsaw Pact, the communism. But again, all that ended in the 90s. In the 90s, it was a golden opportunity for reconciliation, because obviously the Warsaw Pact went extinct, didn't exist. The Soviet Union disintegrated.
So why didn't it? So why didn't it? So, okay, perfect. You got us to 1991. The Soviet Union falls. Perfect opportunity for, you know, kumbaya. Have a kumbaya moment and the world is a better place and all our children and grandchildren get to live in peace freely. Why not? What was so horrible about that? And who made that decision to make it such a horrible thing?
The John McCain's, rest in peace, the John McCain's, the Lindsey Graham of the war did not, and like Ted Cruz of the war, like Senator Cotton's of the war, did not accept that reality. They do not accept, okay, let's going to pass page. Let's going to open a new page in the history of the war. Let's going to accept Russia. The Communist Party is not ruling Russia anymore. It's a small opposition party. The different of the war have changed so much. We can come together. But in the mindset of the New Yorkers, on the mindset of the globalists, on the mindset of the Dick Cheney's of the war, that was not possible. We won, and therefore we have the right to dominate everything. And everybody, Europe, Latin America, Asia, just should do whatever we tell them to do in an imperialistic way. That is the mindset of the New Yorker. And listen, you only have to see the speech. You only have to see what they said. Mike Pence, the vice president of the United States, who was the vice president of the United States for 4 years, just a couple of years ago was in a debate. And he was saying, not because Russia and how evil Russia was, they invade Czechoslovakia and they invade Hungary. And it was Vivek Ramaswamy, the child of Indian immigrants, who have to correct him on camera in front of the world. Mr. Vice President Pence, that was not Russia. That was the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. It was disintegrated 30 years ago in front of the world. But the neocons don't know this. The neocons don't understand it. In their minds, we're still in 1984. And it's them against us. And if you are not with us, you can go out of the way, because we are going to do our way, even if you like it or not.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because in many ways, those same people have been there all along. But it's not just them, because they're famous. Then there's the people we don't know who've also been there all along. They were in the Obama administration. They were in the Bush administration. They were in the Reagan administration. They were in the Carter administration. They went on to be in the Trump administration. Same people in the background making the same decision for all of those years. It's funny, isn't it?
I mean, and the problem is you have people who don't know anything writing the laws. People who don't know anything tell us the United States where it should go, telling the whole world what they must do. And that is the problem. You have no notice. This is what the great philosopher and mathematician Nassim Taleb said. The war is dominated by intellectual yet idiots. Intellectual yet idiots. People in the press, in the media, in the government, who have very little awareness of what really is going on, who have very little awareness of geopolitics, of the realities, of the center of gravity around the world, but they are the one ruling us. And let me tell you something. There were some good people. There were some good people all across with a voice. Okay, I'm talking about people like Pat Buchanan. There were some good people today, like Tucker Carlson.
Wait. I'm glad you mentioned Buchanan. You just took me to where my mind was going as I was listening to you discuss what happened in the United States from 1990 to today, and how the United States became even more rigid in its desire to make more money off of wars and to dominate the world. Good point. Lately, I started thinking a lot about this, and I never thought like this before. But because of the news cycle and because what's going on in Gaza, I started figuring out that a lot of these decisions that you just told us about and a lot of the things that happened may have been driven not in Washington, but in Jerusalem, by people who were actually calling the shots in some of the places that you just mentioned where we have gone to war. Maybe not in all of them, but certainly in a lot of them. So my question to you, given that Pat Buchanan was destroyed by Zionists for simply saying that we need to respect ourselves more than we respected Israel, and that there were too many people who were influenced by Israel in the U.S. Congress. And as soon as he said that, Pat Buchanan was destroyed by the media. So I guess my question to you, how much has Israel had to do with this situation, this desire for the United States to be everybody's enemy by trying to be everybody's ruler?
Well, the way I see it, it goes in two different ways. In 1996, the Clinton administration, and this is plenty of evidence about this, they were looking into join or push for NATO expansion to the east. And half of the people, good people who actually was able to think about it, told Clinton.
Like Professor Jeffrey Sachs was there.
People like Jeffrey Sachs, of course. And people that belong to the administration. And they were a famous later of 50 intellectuals, former diplomats, former military people that wrote a letter to Clinton in that time, in 1996, 97, to not do it. You are poking in the eye the Russian bear. You are doing a provocation, an unnecessary provocation. Don't do it. But there was the other side of the Clinton administration that told him, do it. We won the Cold War. We deserve it. and by expanding NATO, we can expand our influence. We can control. We can keep like pulling the strings in all those little poor countries on the east. And ever since Clinton said, okay, let's do that, it haven't stopped. It haven't stopped with the expansion of NATO, with the expansion with the control. Let's going to control Latvia and Estonia and Lithuania and Poland and Hungary, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they don't need anything else but that their ideology to continue the globalist neocon expansion in Europe. Now, about the Holy Land, about Palestine, that is a completely different thing. For Europe and for Asia, they only need their ideology. But for the Holy Land, for Palestine, it's a different thing. It's a very completely different thing.
But
they need good money and they need the good blessing of AIPAC. That's it.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the good blessing of AIPAC, the politician in the Senate, in the House of Representatives, you are dead as a politician in America.
Well, let me ask you this then. How was it that the Zionist movement and the Zionist power brokers ended up in a beautiful marriage, in bed, we should say, with the military neocon types, right? So how did that happen? And I, you know who they are. I could give you their names. We could go through the list, but that would bore people since they probably don't know who they are. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I don't want to bore you or the viewers, but basically there are two points. Again, they go IPAC and all the propaganda, they go back to the 80s. And they try to keep us permanently in the 80s, in 1984.
Yeah.
And Palestine or the Palestinians, they were not a freedom movement that was a nation supported by the Holy See, supported by the popes, supported by Paul the VI, supported by John Paul II. Nothing like that. They were communists, period. Arafat was a communist and part of the Soviet Union. And that's hammering the mind. Then came September 11th. The worst terrorists are the Palestinians. Forget about Al-Qaeda. Forget about the Islamic State. And you can see the clips of all the propaganda people say, oh, Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, and the Palestinians. Those are the terrible Islamists. They want to bomb New York. They want to bomb Paris. They want to bomb Houston. They want to bomb Chicago.
No, I remember. I covered it.
And then those are the two main factors. And then came the factor of let's going to brainwash a big segment of the population of the United States. And I'm talking about the Bible Belt. I'm talking about the base of the Republican Party, the religious right, conservative social right, that is the Bible Belt in the South, in Alabama, in Tennessee, in Arkansas, in Kansas, in Florida, in Texas. Let's going to bring what? Let's say that we support Christianity. That is the duty of every Christian to support us, because if you don't support us, you go to hell. And I'm not inventing this. You only have to see the amazing interview that Tucker Carlson did with Senator Ted Cruz. And that was his words. Oh, I came to the Senate to help
to serve Israel.
And I have to bless Israel because I want to be blessed by God. So they join the propaganda from the Cold War, the propaganda. I mean, they join the Palestinians. Even if you're an atheist Palestinian, even if you're a Christian Palestinian, even if you're an agnostic Palestinian, oh, you're still an Islamic terrorist. That's number two. And number three, they join that with the religious right, with dispensationalism, with the Christian Christian Zionism heresy, and they have in their pocket a large amount of the population.
Yeah.
Plus, no one in the Senate, no one in the House of Representatives, with very, very few exceptions, is willing to say anything because they know that they need IPAC funds to win, to keep their seat in the U.S. Congress.
Yeah, there was something, everything that you just said makes me think of the Project for the New American Century. The Project for a New American Century was exactly that. It was a coalition of extreme Zionists, Kagan and others, combined with extreme neocons, combined with, yeah, religious right crazies, who all came together and decided it was time for America to truly control the world and that we would do it preemptively. We wouldn't wait for countries to become dangerous. We would attack them if we thought they might become dangerous, which was their explanation for going to war in Iraq, for example. And ever since then, we've seen this kind of thing all over the place. For example, when we took out Soleimani in Iran, or when we recently just bombed Iran for no damn reason. Other than, well, Israel needed us to do it. This would not have happened in the past without some kind of pushback. But where the hell, Ron, is the pushback today?
Well, very few people want to talk about the subject, especially of the Holy Land. That's extremely sensitive.
Not anymore. No. I just did a segment on this. You know what? I think Americans are sick and tired of this crap. I know I am. You know, children's schools in America have paint peeling, none in Israel, shiny, clean, new paint. Americans don't have health care. They got it in Israel. I mean, everything that Israel needs, they come to Rick Sanchez and Ron Alato and have them write checks for their taxes, take that money and send it to Israel. And Americans watching what Israel are doing in Gaza are sick and tired of this. And you can't just say, oh, Ron Alato's an anti-Semite. Rick Sanchez is an anti-Semite. That doesn't work anymore. It's not going to work anymore. I think Americans know. You heard Joe Rogan last week say the same thing. He says, bullcrap. No, I'm not an anti-Semite, and I don't like what I'm seeing. And I don't like my money going over there. So am I wrong?
No. You are absolutely right. It has been an awakening. Let's call it that way. Yeah. In the last year and a half. In politics, in Capitol Hill, only very few people. Micey, Representative Micey.
Yeah, Massey.
Mayor Taylor Green. In the media, perhaps we have Tucker Carlson, a very courageous, a smart guy. We have Candace Owens, a brilliant woman who is talking this. And we have seen that there have been dissent. There have been dissent, and the talking point, the propaganda are not working as normal. There's still, again, we have people like Huckabee the ambassador. Yeah. Why do you think he was chosen for that position? Because of his religious ideology.
Yeah,
But his religious ideology. Yeah. And the apology that Ted Cruz did when he talked to Tucker Carlson was a religious ideology. And of course, he wants IPAC to bless him. But again, he's extremely strong to go against that. If you want power, if you want political power in the United States to go in Capitol Hill, you need to play the game. Otherwise, you're going to be out. And people know that, sadly.
Hey, let me ask you, since you're there now and I'm not, I'm here in Moscow and you're in my hometown. I've always thought Miami's an interesting place. Miami's kind of ahead of the curve and always behind the curve. And in Miami, because we're Latinos, you know, we've always tended to vote more Republican because, you know, it's more of an anti-communist thing. And I get all that, and I think it's perfectly fine. And many of them supported Mr. Trump, religiously almost, because they believe he was a tough guy and he was saying all the right things. But it seems like a lot of Americans are now looking at Mr. Trump, and I'm wondering if they're doing the same thing in Miami and saying, wait a minute, man, you said you were going to be transparent. You said you weren't going to get us into wars. You said a lot of things that you haven't been doing. It's turning out that you're doing the very same thing that Obama did and Clinton did and Bush did, and what happened? I know Americans are asking this question because obviously I read the papers and talk to people. Is Miami that way too?
Well, he still have obviously a great support again among the base, okay, here in Miami. But Miami, like in the whole of the United States, there have been dissent. There's going to be dissent in the base for Trump, because some people, and again, I'm coming back to Marjorie Taylor Greene, and talking, I'm going back to Representative Macy, and talking, I'm going back to Tucker Carlson, to Candace Owens. It have been dissent. I said, hey, you came with America first, but for what we are seeing, you have other countries first in your mind.
Yes.
You are still funding foreign wars out there. You're still bombing foreign countries. Well, what about the people here in Florida,
yes,
or Wyoming or Wisconsin? What about them? You said America first, but what we see with our eyes is not exactly American first. So that is a problem. That's dissent inside the ranks. That's a dissent, a strong dissent. I mean, Tucker Carlson is followed by a lot of people in the base of the Republican Party, and they can see that dissent. The second thing, obviously, some people that don't agree with what Trump is doing as far as going overboard, cutting federal jobs, with perhaps taking away, deporting people who were here legally, just revoking their
visa. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. You're Hispanic. I'm Hispanic. My parents, I'm an immigrant. I came to the United States as an immigrant. At the age of 18, I became a citizen of the United States and changed my name from Ricardo to Richard. And I'm proud of that. And I think it's a great story. But it saddens me because I think there's a lot of other young Ricardos out there, a lot of other Ronaldos out there who, given the opportunity, would be able to do the same things that, you know, you're proud to have become. One of the leaders of the United States, CIA, Army veteran. Your whole story is so impressive. I think there's a lot of other people out there who could do the same thing. And while I'm not saying that we should have open borders, and while I'm not saying that we shouldn't find the criminals and take them away, that's not what I'm seeing. When you go to stores, Home Depot, and take people who are just here in the United States and they want to work, and grandmothers and children, that's not a pretty picture. And that's not what we were expecting when he said he was going to control immigration. That seems cruel to me. To you?
No, I mean, you're right. That's another point in the dissent, especially among the Venezuelan community that I have seen here in Miami. Not that much in the Cuban community, but in the Venezuelan community, is that perhaps they are overdoing it, okay? And a lot of the Hispanic community, not in Texas, obviously, and not in the Southwest, not in Arizona, but here in Florida, a lot of the Hispanic community supported the agenda of Trump, okay? Let's get rid of 15 million people that came under Biden illegally that are overcrowding the job positions. Many of them are in welfare. Many of them are not working. Let's get rid of the Mara Salvatrucha, the M15. Okay,
right. Of course.
That's okay. But when they see overdoing it and going after people who are here legally with visas and are here with refugee visas that are studying, that I know people that are in college, that are university students, and now they don't know if they will continue with their university students. So that makes people think, okay, maybe Trump is overdoing it.
Yeah.
I understand that he goes against a MS-13 person with a very long criminal record. That's good. But why he should go against a university student that is here studying in college? That makes people think and pause a little bit.
It looks lazy. It looks cheap. I mean, if you really want to do this right, do a police action. Go in and find out who the criminals are, send out people with warrants, get them, and get them the hell out of the United States. Totally agree. But to send agents wearing masks with machine guns into a little store somewhere to get some grandmother and some people who are just trying to make a living, it looks Nazi-ish. It looks like Germany in 1942, and I don't like it. Not to overjudge it, but final point on this, and this is an important point, and I think you're going to understand this. Part of the discussion about immigration in America seems half-witted. Let me explain myself. In many ways, the reason some of those people are in America was because the U.S. foreign policy caused them to go to America. They would have been very happy staying in Guatemala. They would have been very happy staying in Colombia. They would have been very happy staying in a lot of countries in Latin America had the U.S. foreign policy not gone in and fomented a coup, destroyed their businesses, or done whatever it is that they'd done, maybe even with our economic policy that said that the United States would be able to put tariffs on a lot of the goods that were coming out of that country, or actually incentivize American companies to put their products in Latin America so that American products weren't worth anything. So there's a lot of things that America has done with its policies that have caused this immigration to come to the United States. And all I'm saying, Ron, is nobody ever talks about that. Nobody in the media, nobody in politics. And it's important.
Well, obviously, it's a complex issue. We have to go back 40 years ago, 50 years ago. We have to go back to the 50s and 40s, where the big Puerto Rican migration came to New York. And then during the Cold War, there were so many conflicts, and sometimes the United States were promoting the migration to the United States for refugees, for people escaping the war, for people escaping civil war,
Honduras,
et cetera, et cetera.
Honduras, Nicaragua, yeah.
So, we have that, obviously, in Cuba, in Nicaragua, Venezuela. You can go to any place now in Latin America. You can go. I was in Peru a few months ago, and they told me, oh, all this neighborhood is now Venezuela. And I went, wow, okay. So Venezuelans in Lima, in Peru, and in Chile, there are hundreds of thousands. I mean, it's unbelievable. But the thing is this, it's a complex socio-economical analysis that we have to go 30, 40, 50 years behind. Now, what most of the Republican Party and most of the Trump supporters did, including myself, we were looking for Trump to reverse the open borders of Biden and Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. because they came with an agenda. As soon as Biden took office in January of 2021, just immediately he took office as president, immediately he declared open borders. And then he was trying to make his base happy. His base, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders and all these groups. And people believe, they don't have a real calculation, but they believe that about 15 million people came into the United States. And we don't know who those people are. Actually, they came illegally. And sometimes they just, people were not at the border, and they told them, hey, let's going to have a... we're going to see your case in court in 1 month.
Yeah.
But you can come inside now. Don't worry. In 1 month, just show up in the court. Yeah. Nobody show up in the court. They were already in the United States.
Oh, listen, you're not going to get an argument with me that the border needs to be better controlled.
Yeah.
I mean...
So that was the main hot issue of the elections. The thing, again, the dissent is when we see that Trump is overdoing it. He's just not doing it against people who is here illegally. He's also revoking visas of people who were here legally.
Including
university students, people who is working. And that is where the people here in Miami is having a problem with that specific factor.
Because he has people working for him or have people who've hired or just doing it the easy way without having to do the hard work of looking for the actual names and looking for court records, because that would take a while. It's easier to just take a couple of guys, put on some masks, give them a machine gun, show up at a place where a bunch of Hispanics are eating lunch and put them all on in a wagon and take them away. And then in the process, you find out that two of them were here legally. Oh, oops, sorry, we made a mistake. Well, that just is not a good look, and that's probably the point to be made. Ron, we have run out of time, my friend. Let me thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. You know, yours is a very important voice. And, you know, all we're trying to do here is give people a chance to understand what's really going on in the world, because if we left it up to the CNNs of the world, nobody would know anything about what's really going on. And I can add, by the way, Fox News, the BBC, the New York Times, and many others. I don't know why I always pick on CNN, maybe because they fired me. So, but thank you, my friend. It's always good to see you.
Very, very nice to be with you. We have to be very alert during the next days because the globalists are not done. The neocons are not done. Now that we have this meeting in Alaska between Putin and Trump, they're going to push very hard to make their way and influence Trump. So the next day are going to be very decisive, believe it or not, for the history of Europe, the United States, and Russia. So we need to be very alert during the next day and to be very alert of what's happening in Alaska. So thank you very much for the invitation, and thank I will you. See you then next time.
And I agree with you, by the way. I'm optimistic, because I always am. I'm a glass half full guy. So I'm looking at that situation in Alaska, and I am hoping for the best. But I'm also not foolish enough to think that after everything that's happened between Russia and the United States, as you well explained just a little while ago, that they're going to come out of there with kumbaya, hugging and embracing. We'll see. I hope that I'm wrong. Thank you, Ron. We appreciate it, my friend.
Thank you.
That's it for us, though. We have run out of time. Great conversation with Ron. You can check out the podcast. It's called Journalistically Speaking. It's on YouTube. My gosh, doing very well, I am happy to say. Thank you. And you can also have a conversation with me on Twitter or X at Rick Sanchez TV. We'll see you next time, and we'll be looking for you.